Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity in the highway to north, this is Safety Wars for Tuesday, March 19th, 2024, also known as St. Joseph's Day, if you're Christian. How's everybody doing out there tonight? I talk for a few minutes before we get started here on the other streams. We're on YouTube. We're on Facebook Live. We're on LinkedIn. We're on a whole bunch of stuff out here. We're going to be working a little bit on a little bit of production stuff in the next couple of days. A lot going on out there. Haven't been here since Friday. The Ides of March. One day I will be able to share everything that we're doing, but it's not going to be now. Can't do that. But anyway, rest assured, we have a lot going on here with Safety FM, with Safety Wars, and our personal lives, and everything else going on. Now, if you want to work with me, I'm getting a lot of inquiries here, and I appreciate the inquiries from people out there. 845-269-5772. And I'm going to put this out there. If you plan on giving me a call and saying, Jim, how long does it take to do a 30-hour course? Or how long does it take to do a 10-hour course? Outreach training, that is. We talked about outreach training last week. The answer is 10 hours or 30 hours. You'd be amazed how many cold calls I get. Jim, I know somebody who could do the 30-hour course in 5 hours. Really? Well, you know, that's like a felony, and you do know that there's people who are probably going to be rotting away in federal prison for doing that. I had one person say, well, how come you don't do so many 30-hour courses? I said, well, it's probably because there's a company that got caught out in Long Island, New York, that gave out 20,000 outreach training cards, allegedly. And there's like no demand. Oh, you know. So anyway, just want to point that out there for everybody. Now, We're going to go into our network feed, and hopefully it'll work today. And this is the latest news. Here is Brian Shook. Thank you, Brian. And here we have from Bears Invade a Sleepy California Town. One California's town is getting ready for its yearly influx of snarling visitors when hibernating bears wake up. The invasion of Pine Mountain is about 75 miles north of L.A., starting they started about a decade ago. Spring greens, melting snow, wildflowers, and hungry black bears are moving into areas where they haven't historically lived. Bears can smell food miles away, can easily rip off the door of a house or even a car if they smell a potential meal inside. They cause hundreds of thousands of dollars in damage every year. Last year, a house caught fire when a bear accidentally turned a gas stove on. It's illegally to intentionally feed black bears anywhere. Why are they talking like this is like the only place that this happens is California? I mean, at our other Safety Wars location, we have bears all the time. And they started to move in about 15 years ago. Back in the 70s and 80s, there were no bears up there. They might see a bear here or there, but and you might see a bobcat. I saw a bobcat one time, up there. Now, with the advent of all these cameras and technology and everything, and now we're seeing a lot more of those. And last year, my son fought away a black bear and protected his sister with a fishing pole, that's the way it is. So NBC News projects President Biden has won the Ohio presidential primary. Biden clinched the Democrat Party's nomination during primary elections on March 12. Former rival Minnesota Congressman Dean Phillip also appeared on the ballot. Trump is also projected to win the Ohio presidential primary. Trump clinched the Republican Party's nomination during elections on March 12th. And what else we got going on? Well, we have stuff, primaries and everything. It's fait accompli who the nominees officially are right now. But as my position is, and I know it's very unpopular for me to say that my opinion is that neither one of these candidates, either one or both of them, are not going to be around in November here. They're not going to make it to the final selection. Now, I wish them well. Don't get me wrong here. I wish them well. Hope nothing ill happens to anybody. Period. All right? But I don't think they're going to make it there. My opinion. California's expensive high-speed rail project faces a possible scrap. Thank you, Brooks. How about this thing with the royal family here with the photos? I mean, how many things have been photoshopped? I mean, out there, and you have deep fakes and everything else. And let me point out, I hope everybody who's sick over there in the royal family gets better and has a speedy recovery. However, I mean, you got to watch out with these Photoshop stuff. I would think that, okay, if she's only going to distribute, and this is Kate Middleton, Queen Kate, future Queen Kate, or Princess of Wales, you would think that her people like review things before they do things, right? And I can see her learning a new skill. We're all about learning new skills here, right? Even the royal family can learn new skills with this. If they're personal photographs, that's one thing. But when you start issuing a professional, professional business-related photographs, and you're probably one of the most visible people in the world, probably want to throw that through some kind of professional. I know I do here, so. Trump files brief to SCOTUS on presidential immunity. Donald Trump is outlining why he should be given presidential immunity in this federal election interference case. Brian Shook reports. Well, let me point out something here. One of my beefs with government reform, and our government does need reform, needs constant reform. Why? It's a human institution like everything else. It's the whole idea of sovereign immunity or immunity. People are getting away with a lot of stuff where in private industry, if it happened, it would not fly at all. From COVID management, we covered that last week in New Jersey, to environmental management and, you know, the way that they make decisions on who to prosecute, what to prosecute, and everything else. I mean, it's, you know, you're an elected official, you're supposed to faithfully execute the laws of the United States. Doesn't happen. I mean, it's not right. It's not good here. And it's the source of, my opinion, not the networks, it's the source of a lot of problems out there with this. Here's another report. Trump rules out Ramaswamy for vice president. Well, I guess not going against President Trump didn't work out so good for you. Maybe you're hoping for a cabinet position. I love New York, right? So New York, right? On April 8th, I'm going up to upstate New York, you know, from where I am here, about 4.5 hours, 5 hours north, right? On that highway to the north, like we always talk about. I'm going for to see with my children the eclipse. I tell you what. You know, how many times you get to see that in your life? It'll be the second time in my life because there's one several years ago. Oh, when my son was a lot younger, I yanked him out of daycare, went over in our area, and, you know, we had the glasses. But the thing is, you got to get the glasses. Well, make sure you get legitimate glasses on that. You don't want to burn out your eyes on that. That's not a good thing here. Going on, and anything else here? Yeah, FBI crime rates. We're going to talk about that here in a minute here. All right, now, that sounds great, doesn't it? Right, well, we're going to go a little bit deeper in that, into this right now. How does the FBI get their data on this? This is in the Uniform Crime Victim Reporting thing here, based on what I recall. I believe that's the name of it. But what happens is, how does this relate to safety? What you're going to measure is what's going to be manipulated. That's an axiom. That's a thing in safety, correct? What you're going to measure is going to get manipulated. We're all familiar with those zero accidents, zero injuries, zero illnesses stuff, right? We see, you know, we go into a warehouse, a workplace, a store, whatever. Hey, you know, hey, we're really good. We have had 300 days, 500 days, 3 days without a workplace accident, right? Or the previous record was 500, but thanks to Bob, and now it's only 2 days. We've seen that, right? We've all seen that. We've all, you know, and we know that what's the incentive? The incentive is to not report things. We've seen this again and again and again. How many times do we get phone calls from clients, right, that say, look, Jim, blah, 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 blah. Go, what should we do? Well, that's a workers' comp case. You should take the person to urgent care or to a company doctor or something like that, emergency room, depending on your situation, and handle that legally. Yeah, but I can't do that, man. We can't do that. We're going to, our TRIR is going to go up. Our experience modification rate. We're just going to march him out the back gate and send him over to whatever. He has health insurance. He could do this. And I have to end up pointing. You know that. You get caught doing that. That's like a felony. You can't do that, guys. Well, you know, all different sound effects. And then what do you hear? Click. That's what ends up happening. Why? Now, here we have all of this data. And I think Philadelphia might have been the one, if memory serves you right, many years ago that got caught falsifying these numbers. Now, how do they collect this data? So you basically are a jurisdiction that reports things to the FBI, and they compile all the numbers. And there's several thousand jurisdictions in the United States, right? It's usually reported by county or by city, right? And then by state and everything else. So here we have, I went to ucr.fbi.gov. I could probably, you know what? Let me do a screen share on this one. Boom, boom, boom. This is a government website, so I'm allowed to do that without getting yelled at. Hold on. Screen. Share screen. And try this again. If it doesn't work, I'm just going to read it. Okay, there we are. Data quality guidelines, and it's highlighted here. For the most part, agencies submit monthly crime reports using uniform offense definitions. So in other words, some states rule something's a homicide on the state level and other states do not. They define it a little bit differently. So for example, a suicide in some states, by the way, if you are contemplating suicide, please call 988 from your cell phone and get help. But anyway, suicide in some states is listed as a homicide. So some states it's not. So they have uniform things, right? State UCR program then forwards the data to FBI's national UCR program, the Uniform Crime Reporting Program. Agencies in states who do not have a state program submit their data directly to the FBI. And it takes them a while to compile the data and everything else. Here's what it is. So what's my point here with this? Totally self-serving. Sorry, guys. Things are going to be manipulated. Look at what we're going through in New York here. They changed the bail laws, and people who, you know, again, I understand there's disparities, there's problems, I get it. There's ways that these people, right, they're from different situations, different socioeconomic, I get it. Believe me, I get it more than most. However, when you start, when you don't enforce laws, when you don't have crime solved, or you're going to ignore things, there's reports from various cities through the United States that unless there's an active crime involved, they're not even going to show up because we got all this other stuff going on. How good are these numbers? I question the numbers because in the past we've had these numbers that are issued. Uniform crime reporting statistics, and these all get compiled worldwide. And guess what? We have ours are probably pretty good in this country. We have controls. I'm not saying they're very accurate, but we have controls and methodologies and everything else. What about the other countries? Do they have that? Are we comparing apples to apples? I did a deep dive in data about a year ago where somebody from another country was saying, we're so safe here, blah, 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 blah. And then it turns out you do a little bit deeper. Well, guess what? They're not as safe as they thought. That's the public said. That's all I have to say with that. Now, what's accurate? What's not accurate here with this? And again, let's remember it's an election year. So do you think that the administration is going to go out there and say, things are wonderful? Or, oh, things are groove now. Things are turning the groove now. I tell you what, maybe Right. Let's look at this in context. Maybe there's less crime because people are moving away from high crime areas. That's what's going on here. Where I live, people are coming out of perceived high crime areas, inner cities, right? And moving out to areas like this. I go get all that. I work with people. Hey, I'm thinking, hey, once freaking retirement comes and I retire in 5 years, guess what? Sayonara, Jimmy. Or I get people now. Hey, Jim, any houses for sale in your neighborhood? Believe me, when my mother died, I had around 10 people ask me about the house. Yeah, we're moving out of the city. We're moving to Jersey. I said, well, you may not. But anyway, stuff like this happens all the time. So how accurate is this stuff? Well, let's take a break and go into our regular commercial stuff, and we'll get back to you in a minute. And it's Tuesday, so it's for our Tuesday message for human and organizational performance.
This is Safety Wars, broadcasting to our brothers and sisters in the occupied territory of behavior-based safety. Get out your secret decoder ring. Here is your nightly message.
Blame fixes nothing. Blame fixes nothing.
That is right, Mrs. Polzel. Blame fixes nothing.
Is your safety training old, stale, and hackneyed? Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that actually addresses your hazards in your workplaces and is not standardized baloney from 25 years ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call Jim Polzel at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you're receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Polzel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
And here we have a market recap with Liz Werner.
Meeting today.
And let's just go over those numbers a little bit more in detail. Dow Jones Industrial Average closed at 39,110.76. S&P 500 at 51.78. NASDAQ at 16,166. Russell 2000, 2035. U.S. 10-year Treasury note is holding steady at 4.298%. Bitcoin fell to 62,518.79. Gold fell to 21,159. Crude oil is at 83.12. And what else do we have here? We have silver at 25.10. It fell slightly. Platinum at 909. Palladium at 10.26. I remember when platinum was double the price. What happened with platinum, from what I understand, is that they are not making as many gasoline vehicles for several years. They're getting into alternative fuels. And what do you think happened? Platinum futures dropped. That's my understanding. That's what I was told. Now, what I was listening to a radio show early this morning where there's a big backlash. And we had predicted this last February 2023, from the International Climate Change Conference in Orlando, Florida, there was going to be problems with electric vehicles. And I hate to be right. Well, we had a guest on discussing it. Suspect in shooting that left a 3-year-old dead turns himself in over in Tampa, Florida. One of the suspects in last year's shooting incident in Lakeland, Florida, that ended with the deaths of two people has turned himself into police. 30-year-old Cavarius Green is believed to be the man who fired a shot into a car at Cambridge Cove Circle, killing 3-year-old Jacques Norton. Family members have been calling for answers. And 22-year-old Demarius Wilson is still wanted in connection with the shooting. He's the twin brother of Camarius Wilson, who was killed in the crossfire. Two people are injured in a scaffolding collapse in Bed-Stuy today. Crews are on the scene, and this was this afternoon. After a scaffolding collapse in Bed-Stuy, two workers were seriously injured when scaffolding collapsed at a building at Green Avenue and Stuyvesant Avenue shortly before 2 p.m. This is in Brooklyn. The men were pinned by the rubble for a couple of minutes until firefighters responded. They were taken to the hospital and expected to make a full recovery. In the meantime, the Department of Buildings is investigating. So basically, in New York City, to set up a scaffolding, you need a license. It because what was happening? We were had people doing the hustle, or what was it? Saturday Night Fever, pointing the finger at everybody else? Oh, he did it. He did it. I don't know nothing. My name is Muffin. What do you think happened? People were still getting killed. People were still getting injured. People were still and everything else. Correct? So they put in a licensing program. So basically, you need a license to set up a scaffold, and you had better make damn sure that all your paperwork is straight, the licensing is straight, everybody's trained, and everybody's trained to be on there because there's a license to even go on to that scaffold. So basically, what am I saying here? Somebody's in deep doo-doo here. So with this, and here we have what else? Here, blah, 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 blah. So we have top generals blast Biden administration for deadly Afghan pullout. The top generals who oversaw the deadly withdrawal of Afghanistan say, and I'm going to have something to say about this, there was a lack of coordination execution prep by the Biden White House in 2021. In a House hearing Tuesday, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, and former Central Command General Kenneth McKenzie were questioned by Republican Mike McCall of Texas. Thirteen American service members were killed in a terrorist attack at the Kabul airport in 2021. Now, here's my question here with this. All right. October 7th, we had a lot of Americans behind the lines there in Israel with everything going on there. Right? It seems like we forgot about the Afghanistani pullout. And the Americans that were left there and the other American assets, human and materials that were left there until today. We rarely ever hear about it. And if you go and you read the book, An Enormous Crime on Vietnam and the POW MIA issue, you would be annoyed also because there was a lot of stuff that went in there that did not that went on in Vietnam that wasn't really part of the public record until there was a commission, I believe it was in 1991, headed by John McCain and Senator John McCain and John Kerry, that uncovered a lot of stuff and ignored a lot of stuff too. So what happened was one of the other people on that committee, once he retired from Congress, he ended up going with somebody else, and they compiled everything that was declassified and published a book, An Enormous Crime. Hold on, let's get the let's see who wrote that book. Here you go. An Enormous Crime, the definitive account of American POWs abandoned in Southeast Asia, public paperback. It's illustrated, written in 2008 by Bill Hendon and Elizabeth Stewart, the author. A phenomenal book, and if you read that book, you'll be as outraged as I was when I read the book. Just one of those things, guy. Yeah, I'm going into things that people don't like want to go into. And this is our final story here with the network news. Quality of life survey for New York City. Survey finds more New Yorkers are not happy with the quality of life in New York City compared to a few years ago prior to the start of the pandemic. Mayor Eric Adams is reacting. The Citizens Budget Commission polled New Yorkers in the second half of last year and found just 30% rate the city's quality of life as excellent or good. That's about a 21% drop compared to the same survey in 2017. The survey shows in most categories, like public and safety and education, New Yorkers don't feel as good about the city as they did in 2017. Mayor Eric Adams likes the fact the survey acknowledges the areas he's working on improving. Now, we just had the thing we were talking about the FBI Universal Crime Report. Things are getting safer, but people are getting more and more dissatisfied. Oh, really? How is it that these two things don't jive, really? I don't know. Okay, and let's see here. We're going to mosey on over to the OSHA website, and we're going to find out what's going on there on the EPA website. And we're going to first take our second commercial break.
In a world where danger lurks in every corner, one man stands as a beacon of hope. Jim Polzel, a veteran safety expert with over 3 decades of experience, now bringing his knowledge to you with Safety Wars. Engaging, informative, and always relevant, that's Safety Wars. Join the safety revolution with Safety Wars, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos.
You are listening to Safety Wars. Tomorrow's safety today.
All right, so here we have OSHA News. We're going to go and share this screen here. Probably should have done it during the commercial break. Well, yes, we are working on better production here. Believe me, we are. Okay. 318, right? This is the OSHA Region 4 news release. Department of Labor alleges pesticide Georgia pesticide manufacturer legally terminated an employee who had filed a safety complaint. Department of Labor, this is from March 18th. Department of Labor alleges Georgia pesticide manufacturer illegally terminated an employee who filed a safety complaint. A work safety complaint, right? The U.S. DOL has filed a federal court complaint against Lawrenceville Pesticide and Agricultural Chemical Manufacturer after the company allegedly terminated the worker. Again, we don't mention employers except. By accident, everything is alleged here. Everyone's innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. And these things get litigated and everything else downward. Filed in the U.S. District Court of Northern District of Georgia, the complaint proposes that a company and its parent company pay the former customer service manager back pay, compensatory and punitive damages to address lost wages, other financial losses, and emotional distress related to their termination, and forbids the company from future retaliation permanently. Well, that's kind of redundant because it's against the law to terminate and retaliate against people. I don't know. Employers are required to comply with all applicable anti-retaliation laws, including those meant to ensure worker protection when raising health and safety concerns in the workplace under the OSHA Act. When employers retaliate against employees, the Department of Labor will not hesitate to use all enforcement tools. And going on here, let's see here. Okay, the company has a history with OSHA and includes a total of 40 citations and $254,000 in damage and proposed penalties from June 2018 to December 2019. And the OSHA Whistleblowers Protection Program actually enforces more than 20 whistleblower statutes. Let's click on that because I don't think people realize that. People think that OSHA only deals with OSHA. Well, guess what? OSHA deals with, obviously, OSHA, asbestos, which we're going to talk about in a minute, and International Safe Container Act, Surface Transportation Assistance Act, Safe Drinking Water Act, Federal Water Pollution Control Act, Toxic Substances Control, basically all the environmental laws. And the W.H. Ford Aviation Investment and Reform Act, which I never heard. Sarbanes-Oxley Act. Federal Railroad Safety Act. Going on. Some of this stuff has nothing to do with safety. Here we have Affordable Care Act. Siemens Protection Act, which has to do with retaliation for reporting to the Coast Guard or another federal agency of violation of maritime safety or regulation. Not necessarily safety. Consumer Financial Protection Act. That's Title 10 stuff. Taxpayer First Act. Now, I want you to point out here, we're going to point out if you can even see this. You have a time limit here, days to file. Under the Occupational Safety and Health Act, which is the one we most commonly talk about, is you have 30 days to file, right? 30 days, right? And, of course, the appeal is within 15 days and all that stuff. So make sure that if you have been fired or they're messing with you because you reported a safety thing, it's causing you money and woe, you got to report it within 30 days. You can't wait on this. You can't say, because this is what happens. How long does it take to get an unemployment claim resolved? My experience, 45 days. So you cannot say, I got denied for unemployment. I got a wrongful firing. Well, wrongful firing is different. They fired me over safety issues. Now I'm going to file a whistleblower complaint. You can't do that because why? You're over the 30-day limit. So if you think, and you're not even sure that you were that your rights are violated, right? You file a complaint. You do it what, right? Because what happens is this will happen. You'll file a complaint. They'll give you a thing, and then they'll ask you questions, and you're like, "Oh crap, I don't know that info." Blah blah blah. Blah. Oh, I don't know. Oh, okay. Well, you know, I got to go back and get my stuff together. Now I got to do it, right? Then you can. Because how do you know? We're regular people here. We're normal, regular people. I would hope. What do you think? People sit at home and obsess. How am I going to file a whistleblower complaint? What's the proper procedure? Blah, 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 blah. Nobody's going to do that. Now, here we're trying to prevent accidents, trying to prevent problems, fighting that safety war. So, anyway. Something to consider here. Now, what's the next one? U.S. Department of Labor joins industry leaders and stakeholders to stress workplace safety during the 2024 Stand Up for a Green Safety Week in March 25th to 29th. That is next week. Home of the iconic Corn Palace, a symbol of the region's healthy agricultural climate since 1892. Mitchell, South Dakota will be host the location on March 25th for the national kickoff of the 2024 Stand Up for Grain Safety Week. This year's event from March 25th to 29th is a joint effort of OSHA, the Grain Handling Safety Council, the Grain Elevator and Processing Society, and the National Grain Feed Association. Anyway, what are they talking about? They're talking about deadly hazards and catastrophic things. For example, confined spaces, engulfment by the... I have nightmares like getting engulfed by grain. Believe me, I do. As you know, I thought that was a lot more common when I was a kid than what it actually is. I've got to be working on a farm. When do I ever work on a farm? Never. I have a problem. We have controversies here in this household about what kind of seeds we're going to put in the garden, you know? Despite a reduction in grain bin fatalities, far too many people are still being harmed and losing their lives as they work to reduce our nation's food supply, OSHA's regional administrator Jennifer Roos in Denver said. The agricultural industry must never overlook the importance of following all safety procedures to protect workers and the dangers of lurking in grain bins, such as engulfments and heat illnesses. Now, the problem with let's talk about this here. Right, they're talking about this. So let's go back and look. Because I think this is worth... No, there is an issue here. There's a big issue here. We're going to go back to the standards here. I'm on the OSHA website. Let's go back to law and regulations here. All right, they want to fix this? I'll tell you how to fix this. All right, a good start. So here we have the standards page. General industry. We have, look, if you're following along at home, look at how long the general industry standards are. And we're going, 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 and we're going. I mean, this is like, I don't know, 1,600 pages, something like that in standards. And, you know, they got a lot of reserves. Okay, great. Well, here we have construction. Oh, look at this. Well, it's construction standards going, and it's 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 going. Oh, look at that. A lot of stuff going on there. Now, let's look at maritime's got the same thing as agriculture, the same issues. That looks like at the agricultural standards. There it is. One page. All in there. Perhaps this is part of what the issue is, because and this is the other part of this. Most of the people in that industry that I have met do not work factory farms. They work mom and pop farms, or they grew up in a mom and pop farm situation. So here we go. Okay, what's applicable? From down, you're like, okay, yeah, but Jimmy, you could go over and it references. It references the 1910 standards. And now we go again. We got to scroll down a little bit.
There's not a lot there.
Oh, so maybe, I don't know, I'm going to go out on a limb here that maybe if they issued some standards here that were applicable here, maybe we could save lives. I don't know. Here, so what's the scope here? This part contains safety and health standards applicable to agricultural operations. Okay, great. What's the applicability of standards? Here, we'll click through there. We'll click to this one. Okay. And I don't know where is it applicable or not. Who knows? Is it really well defined? Not really. So this is what the issue is. You're an employer, and this is what happens. All right, but based on with a little bit of speculation, but not much here, because I've heard stories like this from working across the country doing environmental cleanups, where the only people available were farmhands and things of that nature in some remote locations. Well, I worked for my father or mother or family on the farm. I was an immediate person. Therefore, I'm not covered by OSHA. So therefore, any agricultural work is not covered by OSHA. It's not true. And now you're an employer and you're like, oh, great. Now this person thinks that OSHA doesn't apply. That means they don't know. I don't know. That's what happens, guys. I have to hear that all the time. We're not doing construct. We're not. I used to hear this all the time. We are not doing. We're doing demolition, not construction. Therefore, we don't have to identify. We don't have to comply with any demolition or anything in OSHA because we're doing demolition, not construction. All right. So then we got smart after a while. All right. So how do we consider right in here? Oh, hold on. I'm drawing a blank. But it says, what's the definition of construction? Construction is construction and demolition and everything else that goes involved in that. Right? So it is what it is here. Boom, 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 boom. Anyway, that's what it is. That's the same deal here. Oh, well, doesn't apply to us. How about maritime? Want to take a look at maritime since we're on the subject here? Maritime. Okay, so we have four different areas. Gear, longshoring, marine terminals, and shipyard. Shipyard, a little bit longer, right? We got it's in there. And I, you know, we scroll down there. It's a lot. A lot of incorporation by, how about marine terminals for 1917? There's some stuff in there. I was having a meeting last week on this. And longshoring. We got some meat on there. So, all right. But, agriculture, you know, start issuing some standards, OSHA. That's my suggestion. Do an OSHA outreach training program for agricultural workers. Rather than, we're going to have a good to start to have a week focus on agriculture. Yeah, great start. But maybe they should have an outreach program for agriculture. Wouldn't that make sense? I don't know. Maybe, yeah, with that. Anyway, now, on to our main story here. Okay, I know it's 45 minutes past the hour. Biden's Harris administration finalizes ban on ongoing uses of asbestos to protect people from cancer. EPA's ban is the first rule to be finalized under the new Toxic Substances Control Act process, marking a historic milestone for nation's chemical safety efforts. Today, March 18, 2024, the U.S. EPA announced a final rule to prohibit ongoing uses of chrysotile asbestos, the only known form of asbestos currently used in, at or imported into the United States. The ban on ongoing uses of asbestos is the first rule to be finalized under the 2016 amendments to the nation's chemical safety law, the Toxic Substances Control Act. All right, 2016, 8 years? Oh, yeah, really good effort there, guys, which received near unanimous support in both the U.S. House of Representatives and the Senate. The action marks a major milestone for chemical safety after more than three decades of inadequate protections serious delays during the previous administration. Gotta give that jab in there, right? Serious delays during the previous administration to implement the 2016 amendments. Let's put it to you this way. The old administration has been out of power. Let's see, 2021, 2022, 2023, working on 2024 now. Okay, so. You know, and they were, and there was the other administration, 2017, 2018. So, okay, delay by 4 years, but you had control for 6 years, 5 years. I don't know. Exposure to asbestos is known to law cause lung cancer, mesothelioma, ovarian cancer, and laryngeal cancer, and it is linked to more than 40,000 deaths in the U.S. each year. Well, we all know that, 40,000 deaths each year, but no, is that added to or subtracted to the 50,000 deaths that we know from workplace occupational exposures every year? That's my question. That's my question here. So we know that based on last year, the models that they have, 50,000 people a year die, they're not Jimmy's numbers, OSHA's numbers, that die from the workplace-related things, right? Well, chemical exposures, industrial hygiene, I'll say that. So this 40,000 reported by the EPA, does that include the 50,000 or add some? I don't know. Is asbestos van? Oh, yeah. You want to see someone die of asbestosis? It's like the most horrible thing, one of the most horrible things. To go ending the ongoing uses and advances the goals of President Biden's cancer moonshot, a whole lot of government initiative to end cancer as we know it. The science is clear. This is Michael Regan. Asbestos is a known carcinogen that has severe impacts on public health. President Biden understands that this concern that has spanned generations and impacted lives of countless people. That's why the EPA is so proud to finalize this long-needed ban on ongoing uses of asbestos. Under the president's leadership, EPA has been working expeditiously to put the nation's chemical safety program back on track and finally realize protections of the 2016 law. This action is just the beginning as we work to protect all American families, workers, and communities from toxic chemicals. Right. I tell you what, the hazards of asbestos have been known for a long time here with this. So what are some of the other areas, right? The chloralkali sector uses asbestos diaphragms to make sodium hydroxide and chlorine, a critical use of which is to disinfect drinking water and wastewater. There are other ways to disinfect water and other ways to reduce chlorine. In fact, 2/3 of the chlorine produced in the U.S. is produced without using asbestos. While there are only 8 chloralkali plants in the United States that still use asbestos diaphragms, EPA must still ensure that the 8 facilities have reasonable transition time for the phase out of asbestos that does not inadvertently adversely impact drinking or wastewater purification efforts. Right, I'm reading right from the press release here from the EPA. EPA is banning the import of asbestos for chloralkali use immediately to close the door forever on the use of asbestos by this sector. The 8 remaining facilities that use asbestos must transition, and we'll leave it at that, within 5 years, with the 2 remaining 2 to follow. EPA, and going on, remaining uses. Bans most chic gases that contain asbestos 2 years after the effective date of the final rule, with 5-year phase-outs for chic gases to be used in to reduce titanium dioxide for processing of nuclear material, allows asbestos containing chic gases to continue to be used through 2037. Right at the Department of Energy Savannah River site to ensure that safe disposal of nuclear materials can continue on schedule. Advance the use of asbestos in oil field brake locks, aftermarket automotive brakes and linings, and other vehicle friction products and other gases 6 months after the effective date of the final rule. So here's my question. How much more is that brake job going to cost on your car? EPA is requiring strict workflow, and is the substitute asbestos? I don't know. I have no idea. That's the question I ask. Is a substitute just as safe as asbestos? Or, you know, because I would hate to have ineffective brakes on a car.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
In an unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Pozell, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now, he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all. With his engaging storytelling and expert analysis, Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Pozell and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars, your safety is our mission.
And we are back for our final segment here. Prepping for this final subject, something just came across the line here. So this is from UC Davis report. Finds California's mental health programs needed consistent funding, community engagement. Researchers at UC Davis are hoping to learn from past mental health programs in California to build on and improve future programs. The report's co-lead author, Mark Saville, says the team evaluated 15 mental health crisis programs that ran from 2018 to 2021, designed for young adults and late teens. Experts learned that having these services available led to fewer psychiatric hospitalizations and law enforcement involvement in crisis care. The programs largely depend on community groups working together. The report also highlighted the need for long-term recovery and consistent funding to build upon success when grants for these types of programs end. Co-lead author Dr. Mark Seville says the evaluation highlighted the importance of community engagement. After the team interviewed the program providers and users of mental health services, Seville says many programs use the money to support long-term recovery. I tell you what, it's extremely important here. With all of this stuff, with mental health stuff, and the whole subject is a nightmare here. It's almost like this on the way things operate. Help is not available to you from the government on this, even when we're talking about veterans here, unless you're in a crisis situation. So what seems to happen in a lot of these situations? They put you into a crisis situation, right? So funding and everything is available for you if you're in a crisis situation. Then they could do something. But if you're a non-crisis situation, maintenance, I would say, where you're maintaining your program, then what happens is, you run out of money, you have financial issues. Now we're going to wait for this person, not give him or her the help that they need to keep even keel. And then what's going to happen is they're going to go into a crisis situation. Then we could do something about it. Believe me, you're going to say, well, Jim, what are you going to? We'll just say Jimmy knows this subject. Believe me on this. The head of the FAA chief speaks on Boeing concerns. The head of the FAA says Boeing must shift its focus to improving safety standards. In an interview with NBC News, FAA Administrator Michael Whitaker said Boeing safety protocols are not what you would expect if safety is the first priority. And we all know that safety cannot be a priority. At best, Mike Rose says safety third. I say safety fourth. Cannot be higher than the fourth priority. His comments come after the FAA conducted an audit of Boeing. The audit took place after the door plug on a Boeing 737 MAX 9 airplane operated by Alaska Airlines blew out while in the air. A number of other incidents involving Boeing aircraft have happened in recent weeks, including a tire falling off after takeoff. So I would encourage them to follow the human organizational performance, or we're going to set a place where safety thrives. Right? We're going to have a workplace where safety thrives here rather than set up more rules. So that's all I got for today. I hope to see you tomorrow back here on Safety Wars.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.